Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are going to kind of wrap up these thoughts in covering the convention of states. And the reason this is important is because right now, unfortunately, we actually have to fight for what I would say is we're fighting over what do we do, right? I mean, as I clearly noted, that everybody on both sides agreed there's a problem. The problem is, in a grander speak, I believe the top organizations, the two organizations that are in opposition here, and I believe that what is unfortunate is that the Senate, or I should say state legislators, regardless of, excuse me, whether this is in the Senate or whether this is in the House in some committee, subcommittee, you know, debating whether they do a convention or not. The point I've tried to make is what we'll try to get into to try to wrap up and conclude on this. Because, it, you know, what do you do when you first get up? Everybody has a process when they get started at something, right? And so I think we've completely missed what the process should be and what these both sides will admit is the problem, but they're not addressing the problem. So, as you also know, that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, and you are listening to the only show that's going to talk about the solution. Because bottom line, that's what we're going to try to surmise today. In general, we are talking about the Convention of States, and we're talking about the potential of an amendment. And so there's probably no clearer discussion regarding a solution is to convene a convention or not to convene a convention, right? Well, anyway, we have a comment line, and we'll get into that discussion on the convention, but we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. We had a person call, and I'm not going to, because without that person's approval, I don't want to put their name out, but I had a person call yesterday. They were on the phone for 30 minutes trying to get through. And so I apologize. I actually reached out because I looked up the phone number, because after every show, I look to see, I missed a call. And so if I didn't see it, I didn't see it in the log if you have called before. So and I never called you back. But I do try calling that number back, and I actually try reaching out somehow. And last night I found out that phone number was associated to a Facebook account. So I reached out, and actually the name jived. So anyway, I made contact, and I hadn't heard anything back from the person that I reached out to. Excuse me. So it is what it is. But I figured they probably had some, good reason or what have you to call me, but maybe they wanted to complain. I want you to understand the reason I'm bringing this up is even if you have a complaint, I'll play it. And I will do everything I can to, because I know I'm not perfect, but I mean, if it's just a personal railing, then that's something different. But, cause I don't like, I don't think anybody prefers the personal attacks, but if there's something I'm doing that I could improve on, by all means, if that's why you called, I'm absolutely 100% okay with that. Anyway, what we want to do is we want to actually get into some marketing today. We're going to try to cover a long list of need to know news things, and I'm going to try to make sure that these things are issues that you probably want to know or want to be aware of. And then we're going to get into covering some of the content, right? We've got the Monroe Doctrine coming up. We've got the Missouri Compromise. We want to get through the 14th Amendments. We want to do the 11th Amendment and the Convention of States as well. So we're going to circle back around on the 11th Amendment, and we want to circle back around on that Convention of States just to give you a good understanding that even amendments to the Constitution will be violated when the Constitution itself is not being honored as it was delineated. And see, many states, or at least those people in charge of the states, did not properly authorize the federal government to do a lot of things. As Madison stated, there is only one way. And Monroe stated, and Andrew Jackson stated, there is only one way the federal government can have the authority to do something, whether that be setting up corporations, whether that be setting up the Fed, whether that be, you know, doing anything that they've chosen to do since the Constitution was ratified by the states. And that's through an amendment. If there ain't an amendment, it ain't constitutional, especially if it's not within the enumerated powers. And creating a bank was not within the enumerated powers, especially creating a bank and actually chartering and subcontracting that bank to a private entity. There's no way that they would have to, because the Constitution does grant the federal government to coin money and to, you know, prosecute counterfeiting and those types of things. But there's nowhere where they amended the Constitution that we're not going to coin it anymore, or, you know, the Treasury will coin it, but we will be, you know, under the guise and control of the Fed. Anyway, so there's still some content we want to get through, and then we're going to be diving into the ratification debates. The reason why we kind of go through this cycle is we want to create, from the ratification debates all the way through this process, how the Constitution was defined and how they started expanding and or changing paradigms, and some things that they actually did consistent. You know, the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions were something that was done that was very consistent with the Constitution. So anyway, what we are going to do at this point is we want to kind of dive into some analysis on the Constitution. So as I started talking about, what is it you do when you wake up? What's the first thing you do when you engage something? And as a matter of fact, in this particular case, here we are operating as a constitutional republic where we have a general government that has very specific delegated powers. And the states are off on their own sovereign paths of doing what states do, you know, growing food, manufacturing, and creating commerce to sell abroad and purchasing commerce, you know, from the far reaches of the earth. And so here we are operating, and then all of a sudden, something comes along, and it's just not right. The federal government violates the Constitution because they feel like, well, you know, we need to create a power for us. We need to give ourselves an additional responsibility to do something. And so, and the best example of this was the Sedition Act. And the reason why the Sedition Act, because we actually are looking at Biden and his administration going after speech, going after those who are patriotic, those who are speaking out against him. I mean, his focus is shutting down, that he wants everybody to sing his song, and that's it. No other songs are going to be allowed. If it's not a part of their repertoire, then you can't hear it, you can't sing it, you can't play it. It is unallowed. And so, same thing happened with John Adams. They created this sedition, the Alien and Sedition Acts. And so, what do you do? What's the first thing you do? Well, it would be, and it would actually go to the states. It's the states' responsibility to actually do what they, you know, are supposed to do, as Madison stated, and we'll get into that. But the states are the ones that are supposed to start up. Now, it's been a long time since, you know, we've kind of, you know, responded, and the federal government, and as a matter of fact, for a long, long time, there's been little pushback. And what has happened is that the states, or I shouldn't even say the states, we have been duped by lawyers and politicians with legal background that, oh, well, we need to push everything into the courts. And it aggrandizes the courts as a function and a process in dealing with supposedly these problems. The real problem is the, and I'll just say, if you look at what Madison and the Federal, or not the Federalist, when you look at what it was the Federalist during the ratification debate. I was referring to the Federalist Papers, but when you look at what Madison, Nicholas, and many others stated, they all talked about jurisdiction. As a matter of fact, John Marshall spoke about jurisdiction. Many people talked about jurisdiction. And so what we want to do is we want to, first off, understand what the federal government can do. Can the federal government just create? And this is why we go through the ratification base. Of course, they can't. They can't just create themselves a role. They can't just create themselves a power. And so as they went through the ratification base, they clearly delineated this. And I'll give you a few of those citations when we come back. And they even further defined how they couldn't sidestep the Constitution and their limited jurisdiction. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so whenever anything comes into play, the first question should be, is this a legitimate power? Is the federal government doing something legitimately? See, for a long, long time, we had these great people involved in our federal government. A lot of them were great people. And you know, for a long, and when I say a long, long time, I'm talking about when they just got this ship sailing. Yeah, I mean, Madison, you got to remember, Hamilton was never in the federal government. He was a bureaucrat appointed over the Treasury, and that was it. That was his only role in government. I don't think he ever served as a legislator. He was a lawyer. He was a slimy man. And what I mean by that is I really mean that Hamilton was a very nefarious man who had designs and desires to aggrandize government and move it in the way. And he was the epitome of a person that tried to create as much latitude in redefining the Constitution as much as he possibly could. And so, I mean, as soon as the ink and as soon as his words were no longer reverberating in the halls where the Constitution was being discussed, he started changing his tune and trying to assert implied powers, not enumerated powers, but, oh, well, these things are implied. It was clearly delineated through the ratification debates that there would be no implication. Either the power was enumerated or it was not. And this is why the jurisdiction and how the Constitution was defined is so critical. So we're just going to kind of highlight for the sake of argument on what and why we have to focus on whether this is something within their jurisdiction or not. It's just like any case. If you've got a problem with the federal government and your first reaction is to go to court, no. You have to first determine, does the federal government even have jurisdiction over this matter? We have surrendered completely our sovereignty to an element of government that is a subordinate to us, the people and the states. So Madison clearly stated that, quote, the powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction, such as creating banks. If it's not there, then they don't have the power. You know what? Go look through the ratification debates and find out how many times the word banks were even brought up. And they were never brought up in context to the federal government. The federal government was never to have a bank, because they realized that the federal government should only be coining the money and providing the money for the money supply for the banks. Anyway, Nicholas actually went on and said, and that's only one myopic issue, right? So Nicholas said, in England, in all disputes between the king, this is George Nicholas of the Virginia Ratification Debates, quote, in England, in all disputes between the king and the people, recurrence is had to the enumerated rights of the people to determine, are the rights disputed secured? Are they included in the Magna Carta, Bill of Rights, and etc.? If not, they are generally speaking within the king's prerogative. In disputes between Congress and the people and the states, the reverse of the proposition holds. Is the disputed right enumerated? If not, Congress can't meddle with it. And when he says Congress, let's just substitute that with the federal government. That means SCOTUS can't meddle with it, period. If it is about marriage and there is no enumerated power about marriage, then why is it that we're fighting these people? Because the courts make money. This is how people are ruined, is by being dragged through court. All we have to do as states is assert that you have no jurisdiction over this matter. It is not within the enumerated powers of this Constitution. Now, the federal government tries to use the annotated Constitution and say, well, that's not the Constitution. Excuse me. But this is the Constitution that we, the states, ratified and we granted to you. And these are the only enumerated powers we never gave you. So show us in the amendments we ratified where we allowed you to create your own Constitution to do whatever you felt necessary and proper. Ah, do you get it? Do you start to understand the importance of challenging jurisdiction? John Marshall, of the Virginia Ratification Debates and Supreme Court Chief Justice said, quote, can they, the federal government, make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the state? Of course not. Can they go beyond the delegated powers? if they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, such as homosexual marriage is legal. Well, they don't have any enumerated powers, so they can't make that de facto, you know, ruling. It would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would consider such a law as coming under, they would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void. In other words, they would say, well, this is something we have no authority or power over. We have no jurisdiction. It cannot come into our court. See, that's what is, that's, okay, so I'm getting excited. So what should happen when there's a problem? So let's just say there's a problem with bankruptcies. Let's say, you know, General Motors and American Airlines are going to go bankrupt. Well, what is the federal government's jurisdiction over the bankruptcies? Well, they have none. They go bankrupt and they actually create the laws of how these bankruptcies are supposed to be handled. But instead, just like with the TARP funds, remember when these insurance companies were going to go bankrupt? They're responsible to ensure that there are uniform laws across the states so that bankruptcies are handled and managed in the exact same way. But all of a sudden, we got this too big to fail. We have these paradigms that, oh, well, we, you know, the airlines, they're critical. We need them. Yeah, of course we need them. But just because an airline goes bankrupt because it was poorly managed doesn't mean that the airline or aircraft, airlines, air routes, and our air travel would go away. Somebody would come along and, you know, rebuild American, Delta, or whatever airlines is out there, Piedmont, that goes bankrupt. There are, you know, there's these mergers and acquisitions. Does the federal government have any say? Because this is where Teddy Roosevelt overstepped his bounds. You know, the trust busters. Is there this thing of antitrust? Does the federal government have the enumerated powers to be able to do those things? Absolutely not. So this really goes to the states, and the states must manage and handle these things to say, we're not going to recognize, you know, you going down this path of creating these mergers and acquisitions. The states should be working together in what to do and how to do things. But that's not the priority. The priority is this out-of-control government. So now we put things into context. They can't do these things. So what is it that we do? Well, right now, the narrative has been convention of states or no convention of states. And we are trapped because that's the only narrative allowed. Why is it that the state legislators don't go to these private organizations and say, hey, John Birch Society, hey, or Mark Meckler and the Convention of States and the Friends of the Article 5 Convention, all you institutions that are trying to peddle what you believe we need to do, don't, you know, get out of our way and get out of, you know, our room here for this point in time in selling us your solution. What we need to do is we need to, you know, really drill into this matter. Is this an issue that the federal government has jurisdiction over? And go down each of these issues. Keystone Pipeline. Does the federal government have the ability to stop the Keystone Pipeline? Absolutely not. There's no enumerated power for them to even regulate what the heck's going on. Now, because we've got these global corporations that are, you know, wielding a lot of power to be able to do things, well, most states would quickly surrender to the federal government that this is what they need to do. And I can show you historically that the federal government has never done what was best for the republic to maintain individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And so as they've assumed these powers, what they have done was what was best for all parties. And I'm telling you that there is no representation at the table of government in America for these, you know, foreign corporations and so forth. What should be our strategic plan for energy? What should be our strategic plan for education? The states must be the ones creating those strategic plans, not the federal government. I mean, if you look at where we are education-wise, the government is actually telling us that we have to bring in professionals from India, from all over the world, excuse me, because we're not creating engineers anymore because our education has become so defunct because of Bill Gates and Common Core and this other crap. Anyway, we're going into a break. I'm going to kind of take it down a little bit here, and I'm going to try to come back. And what we want to do is we want to actually start having the dialogue of what the state legislatures, what these committees should be doing instead of being told what they need to do. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so to make this really simple, I guess, because if you look at what Jefferson did, you know, here the framers were working away, doing good things, and then all of a sudden the federal government, you know, created this law, these Alien Sedition Acts, that really crossed the line. Hey, these were violations. So what did Jefferson do? He audited the Constitution. He basically performed an audit to find out how each of these laws violated the Constitution. Well, so what state legislators, and here's a tip, state legislators should actually have written out what the enumerated powers are. Now, there's some questions because of how the federal government has stretched and expanded and aggrandized themselves in the affairs of the states. So we're going to go through the enumerated powers real quick that Congress shall have. Now, this is the preamble. These are not enumerated powers. So this is basically stating that this, the government's going to do this. They're going to have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. So there's the preamble, not creating really any power. And this, the following, are the powers that are actually carefully delegated to the federal government. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states, and not among each state, but among the several states. In other words, among the United States, not as a, you know, state to state getting involved in what one state can do with commerce and what they can't do and how to make things. This does not give them that power. Their job was to ensure that the flow of commerce that was coming in or going out from foreign nations, because where's this commerce coming from that we're sending to a foreign nation? It's coming from the several states. And so the concept of regulating, as was defined in the ratification debates, was to literally ensure that states couldn't engage in state-to-state warfare, that the federal government would be the impartial arbiter to ensure that one state wasn't taking advantage by laying, like New York or some port, you know, attaching all of these taxes to any type of goods that was heading through their state and out to another state. Down here in the Constitution, they are allowed, and I believe, well, we'll get to it, but states are allowed to assess a tax of the burden of interstate transportation through their ports and out, but it has to be within reason. In other words, if they're claiming this for the road repair, then it can only be paid, they can only then charge for the road repair, not for employing all of their, you know, it's not for them to make money. It's for them to cover their costs only. So they have this power to regulate commerce to ensure that they make their money, because this is how the reason this is important is this how they make money, to regulate commerce with the foreign and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Now, Indian tribes at that point were kind of autonomous. They were being integrated and were actually being successfully integrated, especially into the South, until the Southerners, because of their laziness, were being kicked around and beaten up, because the Indian nations down in the South were actually more competitive, and they were beating up. The first newspaper, I believe, in Alabama or Mississippi, one of the Southern states, the first newspaper was done by the Indians. And so they actually got with this competitive thing, and the white folk didn't like it, and they complained, and Andrew Jackson violated the Constitution and did terrible things. Anyway, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. To coin money, to regulate. So what's, and the reason I'm going through this, I'm going to just try to highlight this because I don't want to spend that much time, but every state legislative body should have the listed powers that the federal government has jurisdiction over, and only these powers. And so this comes down to, okay, so some of these things are pretty they're a no-brainer. To establish post offices and post roads. Okay, so the federal government has a responsibility to set up a post office that is a needful building and or post roads. What is a post road? I've gone through this. A post road is the road that takes you from your state capital. It's a highway that will take you from your state capital to the seat of the federal government. That's it. So that's the only road the federal government has any, and I'm literally trying to, you know, get you to understand this. They do not have power to give you a penny. They have no authority to spend a penny on infrastructure, on any highway system, other than that post road. That's it. There's nowhere else where you're going to find that they have the ability to create these super highway systems for commerce. It was nice. This is what Madison wanted to do. That's why I go through Madison's veto of this. Anyway, to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive rights to their respective writings and discoveries. So most people read this to promote the progress of science, to spend money in, you know, the sciences. No. what they're supposed to do is to actually have a, for limited times, exclusive rights or patents. So the U.S. Patent and Trade Office allows the federal government to help protect for promoting the sciences and arts so that you, if you create something, then you become the owner of that and you have rights to royalties if anybody steals it and so forth. That's it. They're not supposed to be spending money on science education. There's nowhere in here where they talk about education, by the way. To constitute tribunals for inferior, or to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. To, in other words, have a regional court system for the appeals, you know, of cases against the federal government on the few things they have jurisdiction over. They've become this huge, giant leviathan of a court system because everything that they have no jurisdiction over goes through them anyway. To define and punish piracies, felonies committed on the high seas, and offenses against the laws of nations. To declare war, grants of mark, or grant letters of marque and reprisals, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. To raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. This was to keep from allowing them to establish an army or a standing army. So when you go through these things, you know, they're really limited. There's nowhere in here you're going to find housing. There's nowhere in here you're going to find the, you know, the right of racial discrimination and controlling quotas for race, culture. America is to be free, and we're supposed to be a good, we're supposed to be good and righteous, but the fact is we shouldn't be oppressing people. We should never, we can get into it, and I've gotten into it a lot over the slavery issue. The slavery issue should have been dead when the Constitution was actually, you know, sent out to the states. They should have ended it at that point. And there were plenty of people, anybody that understands, there were only 3 states out of the 13 that wanted to maintain slavery. And unfortunately, this was the political compromise that was absolutely wrong, that the 2 Carolinas and Georgia held hostage the rest of the Union and created this problem of slavery that went and continued until we finally laid down enough lives to end slavery. So just to be clear, there is no power in here for discrimination or these types of things. We've never amended the Constitution to give the federal government the ability to get in our knickers over disabilities and whether a person has a, you know, these rights to, you know, a ramp or these types of things with business. And the federal government has gotten into so many things that the state legislators need to clarify what they can actually do. This way, when they start running into things and the federal government comes along and says, hey, you're not abiding by this, and you're, you know, we're telling you, you got to do this, this, and this. And then they can look at their list and go, you know what? What you're saying isn't on the list of things that you can do. This is what starts the conversation, and this is what creates, and this is why Jefferson, the first thing he did was he audited, and then he said, okay, here are these violations. Go read the first 5 or 6 resolutions of the Kentucky Resolution that Jefferson wrote. Those were basically declarations that the federal government did not have the power to create its own powers, and that these laws that they were creating were direct violations to the Constitution. So what he did was he then called for the states to unite and start working with his state in, you know, conferences and correspondence and so forth so that they could set things right. Well, the next response was from Virginia. And Virginia actually got on board and said, absolutely, we're behind this 100%. And we're calling on other states to work with this state to, you know, take the necessary measures to actually force the federal government into compliance. So what legislators really need to do is they need to identify what the federal government can do. So when people come up and complain, because, and why, what does this have to do with the Convention of States? Well, when you start understanding what the federal government can do, and then all these people come up and say, hey, the only mechanism for, you know, dealing with federal overreach is an amendment to the Constitution, you just laugh at that person and say, are you serious? Are you kidding me? We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so maybe I'm a little bit harsh and insensitive when I say, when somebody comes in to the state legislators and say, we need an amendment to the Constitution, the reason why I think they should laugh is they go, you poor child. You obviously don't understand. What is the real problem? Why are you here? And then that person could say, well, the federal government has just stepped into marriage, and the federal government has done this, or the federal government has done that. And then you take that person and you point over to the enumerated powers and jurisdiction of the federal government and go, okay, so here are the powers that the federal government can exercise. Is your problem with any of those powers? Well, no. Okay, then why would we want to amend the Constitution? Is there a deficiency in the Constitution? No, because the Constitution has clearly enumerated powers that the federal government can operate. Any power, role, responsibility that is not delegated, they have no jurisdiction, no power to exercise those powers, right? So, okay, then why is it that you want to create an amendment? If it's not a deficiency with the Constitution, and we definitely don't want the federal government to do this, and we don't, is there a power that you see there that you want to take away? Well, no. The only other reason, listen, friends, the only other reason why there would be a need for convening, and this is the only unique amendment process that is not available to Congress. Because Congress can make an amendment to the Constitution, but Congress cannot rewrite the Constitution. So the only other reason for a convention of states is that last reason, to rewrite the Constitution. If they can't identify a deficiency if the Convention of States cannot point to, well, this is a real problem. Now, I've heard some people say, well, with the Commerce Clause, well, I think the Commerce Clause is very clear, especially when you read the ratification debates. So this is why, and this is how important, every state should possess in their possession, they should have the full ratification debates. And you can get them from the University of Wisconsin. You can get their whole catalog on the documentation history of the ratification of the Constitution. And then they can, you know, have all the nice to know information, and they can extrapolate all of the Federalist comments and the Anti-Federalists. And what you should do is you really need to go through the ratification debates and highlight in green the Federalist Papers and highlight in yellow, or not the Federalist Papers, the Federalist comments, those who were proponents for the ratification. Those who were against, you highlight those in yellow. And then you read through all the green, forgetting all the yellow. Why? Because what was said in the yellow was rejected. When they ratified the Constitution, they rejected everything in yellow. So everything in green now becomes the legal terms and definitions of what this Constitution was to do. And now the states actually understand. They can understand the intent. And a great case in point is this whole issue regarding impeachment of the president. Can a former president be impeached? Absolutely. At the writing of the Constitution, the president was set for four terms, and once his term was up, he was no longer president. He became John Doe. He became a regular citizen. So there was no need to have to worry about removing emoluments from bad players, because he had no power. He had no authority. Now, a former president actually has worldwide renowned access to go to any other heads of state that are active. As a former president, they have created emoluments, which are payments, a retirement payment. They give them the benefits of intelligence briefings. They give them the benefits of security details and so forth. And they pay for the cost of the travel of whenever that head of state, the former head of state, travels to a foreign country, they get a secret security detail. Well, who pays for that? You and I, the taxpayers. Well, that's an emolument, my friends. That is a position that is being funded by the government. This is why former presidents can be. So when you start looking at the Constitution and going, well, hold on, you know, the president isn't the same kind. Well, the president today and former presidents today are not the same in context of the Constitution when it was written. They've made changes and they failed to actually inject, okay, now that we're creating a permanent emolument, former presidents can be, you know, tried for treason and can be actually impeached and removed. So here's the thing, and the reason this is important is because they're coming after yours truly, or I should say retired military. They have passed a law that says that they can actually court-martial a retiree. What they do is they would call them back onto active duty. But why are they doing this? They passed this law just recently so that they can silence retirees who are out speaking about the Constitution, about what is, you know, constitutional, what isn't constitutional. So yours truly is, you know, and many other patriots that are former, you know, retired military, I should say not former, but retired military, they can actually call you back to it. Now, they've created a law to do this, but I want you to understand that that law is an ex post facto law. Now, when I retired, that law was not in existence. Do they have the ability to now stipulate, yes, that after your contract and after you retire, you must not be able to say anything about the government? And have you signed the document? Because when I got out of the military and the intelligence community with the military, I had to sign a whole bunch of documents that said I would not disclose any information regarding these national secrets. Okay, so I am under legal hook here not to disclose these things. But I did not sign any documents to say I acknowledge that I cannot complain about the sitting president. I cannot complain about unconstitutional government. And more importantly, I cannot basically tell you what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional. That, my friends, would make it impossible for them to prosecute me, because this law that they, I had this legal right as a U.S. citizen to be able to teach the Constitution, to be able to speak up regarding these things. They came and created a law that now made that illegal. That's an ex post facto law. And so nobody ever challenges these concepts. Well, the government's done this, and so obviously they can do this. No. And when you look at the arguments, this was never brought up as an ex post facto argument, that they can't do this to somebody that they didn't actually stipulate in their contract that, you know, when you retire, you can't say these things, or we can actually force you back into the military and court-martial you. And as far as I'm concerned, that was not, and that is not, on the table for many of us that have retired. And it's unfortunate that they have done that. And I'm telling you that the states need to stand up to the federal government and say, you can't do this. You can't, one, pass ex post facto laws, but you can't also force, you know, a specific behavior, whether you like it or not. That goes right down the party lines of politicizing a retiree and what they can say and what they can't say. In other words, as long as there's lapping your, you know, licking your face off, you know, sitting on your lap, then okay. But if they're biting at you because you're doing something that is wrong and you don't like it, friends, this is where we are going. I forget who said it, but the quote, to understand, you know, whether you're living under tyrannical powers, or to understand, you know, who is really in control, is the person or the entities that you're not allowed to complain about. And I am here to tell you that we are right there, smack dab in the middle of the mire. We're in the swamp. And it's so easy. The states can drain this so quickly, because here are things that the federal government is doing that they shouldn't be doing. Just because somebody comes in and says, we need to amend the Constitution, doesn't mean that they've identified a deficiency or have identified a role, responsibility, and power in the Constitution they want to grant additional or take away. The real reason why they want the convention is for the other reason, the wholesale changes to the Constitution. This is the reality, and they're not addressing the problem. If they really cared about government overreach, they would be teaching the state legislatures about their authority as Madison and Jefferson did. Point blank, they are being disingenuous and they are being deceptive. And the John Birchers are equally, and anybody that is just arguing against to talk about the dangers and not saying this isn't the process, this is the process. What Jefferson, and when they say and claim, well, it's nullification, they are misrepresenting Jefferson and Madison. Anybody that uses the terms, well, states should nullify, they are misrepresenting what Jefferson and Madison did in 1798. It's that simple, friends. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. We need you to get engaged with your state legislators. We'll be back. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.